The way we set about organising our homes, our businesses, and our physical surroundings for maximum ease and access is nothing new, especially in the fields of design, architecture, and even workplace safety. But in Asia, for hundreds of years, there's been a method employed by masters of their field in making their surroundings not just accessible and safe, but also lucky, restful, inspiring, and affluent. It's called Feng Shui in Mandarin, or Feng Shui in the Cantonese dialect, or even Fu Shui in Japanese, or Vishtu throughout India. Needing a bit of a revamp of my own luck, restfulness, inspiration, and of course affluence, I joined the Feng Shui tour of Melbourne's Chinatown one chill Sunday morning with some Jewish women and got some insights from our master, Jody Brunner. First, though, over a bit of yamcha, I asked my women companions why they are interested in this Asian art.
I always was interested in Feng Shui. I've got a niece that she is very much involved in it, and she told me a few things, and I just met to read the website of Jolly, and it looks very interested and very impressive, so I decided to contact her. Mm-hmm. And to organize this tour group, which was very contributing to my knowledge anyway.
Before we hit the tour, I asked Jody Brunner about the origins of Feng Shui.
There's a lot of different theories about the origins of Feng Shui, and one of the earliest known figures or heroes of Feng Shui was a guy called Fu Shi. And Fu Shi, actually the word Fu Shi means taming of animals. So the theory is that this was a tribe of people who learnt how to tame animals and how to use agriculture. So rather than being nomads, they actually settled down on the banks of the river. And they learnt how to identify certain symbols on the back of a tortoise shell. And those symbols would tell them about the future. So it was a form of divination. So these are sort of the origins of Feng Shui in China. And then when Buddhism came to China, it happened because the emperor had a dream about a golden Buddha, and he asked his advisors what that meant, and they said, it means that that Buddhism should be worshipped in China. So the emperor sent his envoys to India to bring back Buddhism to China, and thereafter Buddhism in a way became associated with all Chinese culture, including Feng Shui as well. The Indian system of Feng Shui is called Vastu, and it has a lot of similarities as well, because they also use the mathematical formulas and they use certain grids with numbers in them and things like that. So there's similarities. The difference in the type of Feng Shui that I do, and there's different styles of Feng Shui, is that it's based on the place in which we live and the time as well.
Actually, the time is about 10:30 in the morning, a bit early for me on a Sunday. But as we join the tour, we'll see why Melbourne's Chinatown is the oldest and most popular in Australia.
Now, people always ask me about Chinese gardens, and a few years ago I started doing research on Chinese gardens and on Tianjin Garden as well. This is called Tianjin Garden. Melbourne's sister city in China is Tianjin. And so the city of Melbourne, when they had this space available and they wanted to dedicate it to our sister city in Tianjin, so they invited the officials to come over from China to give some advice about what they would think the garden should look like. And there's four different elements of a traditional Chinese garden, and they've all been incorporated into this garden as well. So the people from Tianjin, the officials from Tianjin, created a plan of the garden. And actually the first thing when we always look at a Chinese garden is it should have a wall all the way around it, because that wall represents keeping the yang energy out, so that in the garden it's nice and peaceful and quiet, because that's yin. Yin is peaceful, yin is quiet. And so a traditional Chinese garden, like if you've ever been to the one up in Sydney, that has a big garden, a big wall all the way around. But here they couldn't put one all the way around for security reasons, but they put a symbolic fence or wall around the back of the garden.
We were talking on the tour of certain rivalries between Feng Shui masters. And some say that, well, that's, you know, that's very good Tai Chi, or that's very bad Tai Chi. Is there a competitive spirit amongst Feng Shui masters?
Well, there is. Because whoever we study with, we would tend to become devoted to that master. There are some people in Australia, for instance, who have studied with many different masters. I don't believe necessarily in doing that. I think once you find the person who is imparting the right knowledge, then they're the ones who we should follow. But depending on where we study Feng Shui, different masters have slightly different interpretations on things, and so in the process, the result can be a little bit different as well. Mm. So I was very lucky that I studied with Master Yu. He's actually a scientist, a mathematics professor, and he actually taught mathematics in Hong Kong. So the reason why he started studying about Feng Shui was because he wanted to expose it as this fraudulent, superstitious nonsense. And then in the process of his studies and investigation, he found out that it was actually very scientific. As I was saying earlier, it has a science and an art part as well. The science is all the mathematical formulas, and they are very mathematic. And then the art part is the interpretation, and the interpretation is very subjective. It changes from person to person. So when the City of Melbourne asked me to do a report on Chinatown in Melbourne, I recommended to them that any changes that they do in Melbourne's Chinatown, they should put a plaque there, so that if they've used any of my recommendations, they can explain what it means and why it means that, so that there's no cause for differentiation from one interpretation to another. Most Chinese restaurants, when you walk in, you can't walk straight into the business. You have to walk around. And here we see it again. This is a wall here that they've created out of glass. That's called a spirit wall. And the spirit wall stops the evil spirits from getting into the building. Now, what do the evil spirits mean? They mean like those straight lines of energy pointing towards our front door. The way that they stop that is to put a wall there. So when you walk in, you have to walk around the wall, and that stops all the bad energy getting in, and only the people with the money can get in. So that makes it good feng shui, doesn't it? Feng shui is a type of environmental science and also art. The scientific part of feng shui is where we use a compass to analyse what direction a building is facing. And based on the direction the building is facing and when the building is constructed, I draw up a chart for the building, and it's like a type of astrology for the house, or house astrology. And it tells me about the lives of the people living in the house and what's happening in their life.
So when you actually look at, say, how someone has their house organized, you can tell the way that forces are moving already within their lives?
Well, yes. The first thing I need to do is take the compass reading, and then every 20 years the feng shui changes. So when the house is built, it's built within a certain 20-year period. And during that time, there's certain energies inside the house. And so at the moment, we're in period 8, which started on February the 4th, 2004, and goes to 2024. So a house that's built after 2004 is a period 8 house. And so based on when the house is built, that has a certain type of energy, or chi, as we call it.
Is it the role of a feng shui master then to say, well, okay, it's facing maybe slightly in the wrong direction, so we now have to make those corrections within the house or in the garden or elsewhere?
Yes, actually it's very hard to find the perfect location. In my tour of Chinatown, I mentioned that an ideal location would have a mountain in the northeast and water in the southwest. But even then, the house still needs to have a certain orientation, and every 15 degrees that changes. So yes, if a house has got an orientation that's not ideal, I may say something like, when you enter the house, I always ask the clients which way do they enter. If they enter through the front door, but the front door doesn't have very good chi, I might say use a side door, or sometimes even use a back door to come into the house, because when we walk, we carry the chi with us. And that chi is what we bring into the house, and it fills up the house with certain type of energy, which will lead to our success in financial terms.
You mentioned there's a compass so you can see the orientation of a building or some architecture or a new feature.
Yeah.
But what else, what other tools does a feng shui master use?
Well, actually, the compass is the all-seeing, all-knowing feng shui calculator. And it's called a lopan. And you might have, I think you've seen one before. It has different rings, and each ring is a different formula that we use in feng shui. And there's a number of different formulas that we use. So that's the basic tool that we need. Without the compass, it's very hard to get an accurate reading.
Back at the Yum Cha restaurant, and out of the cold, my fellow tourists and I are settling down with a pot of green tea.
How do you feel when you talk about this tour or when you talk about feng shui amongst friends? How do you think they'll respond? Do you think they'll roll their eyes and think you're talking witchery? Or
my
do you
family,
think...
Yes, my family will be probably a bit sceptic about it. But I guess when you tell them about your own experience and what you've had from it and things that, even the kind of things that she's recommended and you've done it for yourself, whether it's your business, your home, then maybe they'll take a different approach to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely believe in it. I run my business on that as well. And now I'm trying to do a bit of my room.
In this modern age of mini displayers, iPods and fast cars, there has been a lot of scientific evidence of magnetic fields and a lot of things which maybe we can actually put against these ancient arts and these learnings over history without such incredible machinery. How does the modern age look upon feng shui and to substantiate it and also give it some, you know, relevance in the scientific age?
Well, as a student of Master Yu's school, because he's a science background, his school is called the Feng Shui Research Centre because we're always constantly researching about feng shui. And it's actually quite difficult because it's hard to be in the same place at the same time in different, you know, in a controlled environment. And people are also different as well. We're born at different times. We are influenced by the energy or the chi of a house in different ways. And so it's very hard to prove it scientifically, but the existence of qi is starting to be proven more scientifically as well. For instance, in acupuncture, where the meridians of the body are activated with the acupuncture needles, that is the qi flow within the body. And the earth too has qi flow. It's just a matter of tapping into the right place and for the best results.
It was interesting to hear about, and a lot of things make sense. So for sure I'll take something with me.
I think the interesting thing about feng shui as well is that so much more Western people are adopting it. And I wonder why we are feeling an attraction to it. But it's like Western medicine as opposed to Chinese medicine as well. So many more, you know, Western people are being drawn to these sorts of other alternatives, and you wonder, well, why is it? What sort of arts is it providing or hope is it offering that what we've been brought up with? Maybe it's more about we want a bit more than just having the dollars in the bank. We actually want to find some sort of meaning, or people aren't looking to religion so much anymore, but they're still wanting that sort of spiritualism in their life, but through different avenues. I don't necessarily believe in feng shui, but like Aliza, I find it really interesting, and I think the why people do it and why people are interested in it, it's almost more fascinating than the thing itself.